This week on the BOAG World Show, we look at how to differentiate your business from the competition and how to get management to take tech debt seriously. This episode of the BOAG World Show is sponsored by Aurelius Labs and 2Checkout. Hello and welcome to the BOAG World Show, the show about all aspects of user experience design, digital strategy and working in digital. This season of the show is a virtual meetup, which seems very topical at the moment, but considering every conference on the planet seems to be getting cancelled and any assembly of human beings is being banned. So now virtual meetups are all the thing, and we started it even before Corona came along. That's how rock and roll we are. How are you doing, Marcus?
I'm not that good, really, if I'm honest. On that subject, I'm a bit of a golf fan, mm-hmm. nerdy from that point of view. I was watching, there's a big tournament on at the moment. I was watching it last night, and it was going on. I'm really tired, I could go to bed. Woke up this morning to see who was in the lead. Cancelled.
Yeah.
Between when I went to bed, and it's like they just nassled it. That's not going to do it. This amount of money that must be being lost is crazy. But I've got a cough.
Oh, dear. Oh, that's it then. You're now a social pariah.
Well, it's kind of the government announced yesterday that if you've got a fever or a persistent cough, then you should self-isolate.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, as you can hear now, I don't have a persistent cough.
No, you don't.
I have not coughed once. Last night, however, as soon as I lay down, I couldn't stop coughing. And it was just driving me, and I thought, oh, this is it. I've got it.
Right.
But, I think it's just a cold.
Just see how it goes today and, go from there.
But I haven't had a temperature, and I've read about it, and it says, I haven't seen it written down that if you can get it without the temperature. I think it's part of the process.
Oh, okay. So, who knows? Do not take our medical advice on this podcast. We are certainly
same
not.
Same as our legal advice.
Yeah. So, Ian's just joined
We've
us.
We've got Ian.
Excellent. Ian, you're coming on the show. I don't know whether you did, and you knew that you were coming on the show, but you are now because it's a bit quiet this morning, so we're going to need anybody we can grab.
Now he's a quick lever.
Now he's first time joining a quick lever. Yeah. Okay. Well, hard cheese. You can't go. So, yes, please don't take our medical advice, but refer to your local whatever, public service announcement, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I'm fed up with the coronavirus and I'm fed up with talking about it.
Oh, Paul, you're going to be so much more fed up with in a few weeks' time.
I know.
We're still at the kind of like, well, no one I know's got it kind of thing. Yeah. So it's quite exciting, isn't the right word, but it's sort of, it's fearsome. It's like, but we'll all be sick and living through hell.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
So let's enjoy it. Let's have a party.
Yeah. Well, there are no cases in Dorset yet, apparently. No.
15 in Hampshire.
Oh, well, you're disease ridden there then.
But I mean, that's like there are 500 recorded cases, but they reckon there's between 5,000 and 10,000.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, we are just talking about.
I'm much more excited by my birthday present that I've got myself. Very exciting.
Not your birthday yet. Well, your birthday's the end of this month, isn't it?
Yeah, it's close enough, isn't it?
Is it 31st of March?
That's very good, Marcus. Mm. I couldn't even tell you what month your birthday was, let alone what day.
Said it all, really, isn't it?
Well, we've long since known that you're a much nicer person than me, haven't we? I mean, I think from day one of us working together, we managed to both work that out.
The only reason I know your birthday is because mine is the last day of February and yours is the last day of March.
Oh, okay. So this year, it wasn't the last day of February.
Correct.
Because it was a leap year. There we go. Well, that now I'm going to remember. Morning, Paul. Welcome to the
Hello,
room.
Paul.
So I've got myself for my birthday a DJI Osmo Pocket. Have you heard of these little things?
Lots of letters and words there.
I know.
Pocket. Right. I know what pocket means.
Exactly. So DJI are the guys that make all the drones, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right. And the DJI Osmo Pocket actually isn't a drone. It's a little camera. Let me get it, actually. Hang on.
Pocket
this
camera.
It's going to be really good for an audio podcast, isn't it?
Dodgy, but there you go. And now Paul's there. I was not expecting his chair to look like that. I was expecting a huge leather kind of throne, really.
It's a temporary chair until I find a chair I really like.
Fair enough.
So yeah, look, this is the DJI Osmo Pocket. For those listening to the podcast, it's a stick, really, at about, I don't know, what would you say that is? About 3 or 4, oh, 4 inches, maybe?
I was going to go 4 inches. Yeah, nice. Using Imperial there.
Oh,
lovely.
Yeah. I still do with measurements and stuff like that. So it's actually tiny. It does fit in the pocket. But what makes it cool is it's got this gimbal at the top. You see this gimbal?
Yeah.
So essentially, when you turn it on, the gimbal kind of kicks in and does its thing, and then it's stabilizing all your shots, right? Mm. And so it does all kinds of things, like you can do time lapses with it. You can get, it tracks your movement. It keeps stable video and all that kind of stuff. And it's just wonderful. I'm absolutely loving it. It's so much fun. Just going out and taking little nice videos, and so yeah.
Can you strap it to your helmet, sort of for sporty stuff and things like that?
Yep, you could do that kind of thing. It's not as robust as a GoPro kind of thing. It's not like water resistant or anything like that. But it is a really good little camera, and I'm absolutely loving it. I never thought, if I was honest, I never thought I'd buy another camera. Because smartphone cameras have got so good, haven't they? Yeah, exactly.
That's just awesome. I've got big lenses and all this kind of, they're just gathering dust under that. I'll ever use them ever again. But yes, you bought one, so. But it's more of a video camera, really?
You could take stills with it as well, absolutely. Mm. And it obviously it's got a bigger lens than you get on something like a phone. I mean, it's not a massive lens, it's not big like a camera, but it's still very, very good. Jason is saying that the stabilization on the new iPhone is pretty good, which it is. But this, a full-blown gimbal like this just blows it out of the water. It's worth checking out the website because it's a really good little product. I'm super chuffed with it. And it's big. It's small enough just to go in my bag that I carry all the time anyway. I don't like carrying big.
That's the problem with SLR cameras. It's just like, you look like the dick with the camera, but you've got to carry the bloody thing around. It's always, you've always got the wrong lens on for the shot you want to take. Maybe that's just me being neggy. I don't know.
Well, that said, my parents, my dad is just come back from Costa Rica. Oh, he's coughing. My dad has just come back from Costa Rica, he got a new lens, which, because he's a professional wildlife photographer, and it's a massive telephoto lens. The stuff that he's got is absolutely stunning. Yeah. And what really impressed me about it is this lens is probably, I don't know, 2 feet long. It's a huge thing.
Yeah.
And he said all of those photos he took were handheld, right? And they are crystal. But it's got such good image stabilization in it. The other thing, at the moment, he's got a cataract in one of his eyes, so he can't even see properly. So he was totally
vaguely over there.
So he was totally reliant on the autofocus of the lens, and they are pin sharp, absolutely unbelievable. Wow. The quality of these things these days is incredible. Anyway, none of that is anything to do with web design, but I'm just excited about
it. So. We're just having a chat.
Exactly. So what have you been working on, Marcus? You been doing anything interesting?
Well, I'm going to do a bit of a sales pitch.
Oh, are you?
Because you always ask me this question. And I thought, well, what's happened that's a bit different this week? And anyway, we had last Friday, we had an unprompted email come in from a client of ours that said the following. Having had to work with a number of different external suppliers on this project has really made me appreciate even more how nice it is being able to work with an agency that you can trust to do what they say. You can trust to do what they say they'll do when they say they'll do it and who'll do it well, right?
Oh, wow.
So everyone was like, wow, that's great. And it's that just got me thinking along the lines of, because I also did a pitch this week.
Yeah.
And it was like, and though I think we are really good at what we do, I think that there are lots of other agencies who are also really good at the same things.
You know, yeah.
You know, visual design, UX design, back-end coding, blah, 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 blah. And I think that this kind of thing, that we're reliable, we're honest, as Ian, who's in the chat room, said, we don't lie to you,
yeah.
Is actually the real differentiator.
Yeah.
And what's really, really hard is to get that across to people who you've never worked with before.
Yeah. Because you can't just say it, oh, we're really trustworthy. Because, of course, mm-hmm. everybody says that. And also, yeah. almost by saying it, you seem less trustworthy, don't you?
I know. But it was just, it was great. So with this pitch we went to, I basically finished with that quote.
Yeah.
A screenshot of the new homepage of the website, and I guess we'll see if it worked soon. I'll tell yeah. you next week.
It is really interesting, mine, because people so warm to that kind of honesty, right? So I had a guy that one of my other clients recommended to me that I did an initial call with yesterday, and he was talking through what what he wanted and that kind of stuff. And after a while, I said to him, look, I'm not the right person for you. And it completely threw him that I turned around and said, no, I'm not the right fit. You need to go to these people. And so we talked a little bit longer and he said, well, what do you do? So I explained what I did. And he said, oh, yeah, we really ought to do that as well. I'll come back to you once we've done this next piece of work, you know. And so people really... they love that disarming honesty. But you don't see it that much, you know, these days online. It's like I'm almost tempted on my website to list the kind of people that shouldn't contact me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a tough one. And as you can see, I'm a little bit lost as to what's the right thing to do. But I thought make a really big deal out of it and finish the presentation with it, and hopefully it had the right effect.
Yeah.
Effect.
Does it matter?
My brain is not working.
No.
So what have you been working on, Paul?
Oh, I know. So I am having fun at the moment. I'm doing so there was a client that came to me ages ago asking me to wireframe. You know how some projects snowball? So they asked me to wireframe a few pages for their new website. And that turned into a few more as I started to kind of, you know, write the copy and improve the conversion rate optimization, that kind of stuff, the stuff I normally do. And so I ended up wireframing pretty much most of the key pages on this website. It wasn't a big website. And then they asked me would you design it too? So I ended up designing this website, which I really don't do that much these days. And then they asked me to turn it into a pattern the design system, so I had to go through and do that. Now they've come back, they're a software as a service company and want me to create a design system for their software as well. So that's what I'm doing at the moment, a design system for a software as a service platform, which is the first time I've ever done anything like that. I don't normally work on software as services. My specialty tends to be on very content heavy websites same with Headscape, isn't it? So it's actually a really interesting challenge to think about all these very task orientated user interface elements that maybe you don't do as much of on a content heavy website. So yeah, really, really good. I'm really enjoying it, which is loads of fun. I like doing design systems because you have to think kind of, yeah, how is this going to be maintained and all that. There's a lot of, it's a nice meaty challenge that you get your teeth into. I get bored with doing the same stuff. It's really unfortunate. Well, it's not unfortunate. It's wonderful that I rank number one on Google for customer journey mapping. I am sick of running customer journey mapping workshops.
They're hard. They really are hard.
Yeah, they
That's
are.
That's why.
Yeah.
I learned quite early on that you need to go in with a very good idea of examples of, you know, the different phases and what could happen at the different phases. Otherwise, you just end up with a lot of blank looks quite half the time.
Yeah.
So it's a tricky process. Bye.
Right, let's do a quick sponsor, and then if we can get Ian on, if he hasn't run away. Is Ian still in the room? I bet he's run away, isn't he?
Hello.
No, he's still there. So I'll get Ian on in a minute. Right. So, in fact, I'll invite you now, Ian, and then just because it'll take you a minute to connect. So, right. Okay, so our first sponsor is 2Checkout. So 2Checkout, if you don't know, deal with all the craziness around digital e-commerce, you know, which is a really complicated thing. You've got different rules, different challenges that you face in different countries, and it's very difficult. So essentially 2Checkout handles all of that from you. So it handles everything from the buy now button through to payments, finalizing your order, everything that you could possibly think of, delivery notifications, the lot. So it's like a modular platform where you can pick and choose the bits that you want from it. So it's got like a global payment system, it's got digital commerce, obviously, it's got subscription billing, global tax and financial services, risk management and compliance, and it's also got this big affiliate program you can take in. So basically it's a lot more than just payments. So the thing that really interests me, for example, is that they do this subscription billing and management, which means that, you know, if you wanted to set up some kind of subscription service, even for physical goods like toy rental or toothbrush head replacement or something like that, then you can do all of that through them. So if you're doing any kind of e-commerce or digital commerce, then you want to check them out by going to 2checkout.com. Hello, Ian. Good to have you on the show. How you doing? It's been a while. Well, it's been since Christmas since we've spoken. That was a smooth transition, wasn't it? That went really well.
We're not hearing you, mate.
That's great. Great. That worked really. I thought I was on top of things, but apparently not. Okay, we'll give up on Ian then. Well, that's a shame. Yeah, it would have been nice to have got Ian on the show, but good luck, Marcus, editing that. Anybody else want to come on? Yeah, have we got anybody else that's willing to jump on a mic? Hello again, Jason. How are you doing?
Hello. Have we got the technology working this time?
Yes.
Hey. Yeah. Working.
Victory.
Wonderful.
How was America?
So what have you been up to?
Yeah, well, since the last time we spoke, I went to the States for a couple of weeks. Had a branding masterclass to attend over there in LA, which was pretty good. Love San Francisco, mind you, and I've decided that Las Vegas is the most insane place on the planet.
I've never been.
Oh, it's mental. It is mental. We kind of, you know, if you're going all that way, we sort of had to duck over there for a bit. It's you got to go, Marcus. It's a crazy, crazy place.
Yeah, I mean, I spent a large part of my life in the late 80s, early 90s in the States. I've virtually lived in Los Angeles for a couple of years, but I never went to LA, weirdly.
Wow. So, okay.
One day.
You mean Vegas?
Vegas. Duh.
So, Jason, I wanted to ask you about this branding masterclass that you went on. So who ran it and what kind of things did it cover and what was the big takeaways for you?
Okay, it was run by a fellow named Marty Neumeier, who has written a few books, The Brand Gap, Zag, The Brand Flip, and some others as well, but he's written a few books. And it was held at the office of Chris Doe, who has a YouTube channel called The Future Without an E on the End. And they do a lot of work in terms of helping designers figure out their pricing and approach the business side of design rather than just, you know, just making things look pretty, if you like. Big takeaway. There was a few. A lot of focus on differentiation. Like, what can you do to differentiate yourself in a way that's meaningful to people that care. And I guess, Marcus, you mentioned before that, you know, you had that that comment about being trustworthy, which was really, you know, something to be proud of. But you can't really say, oh, yeah, we're the trustworthy ones, because that's not a good differentiator to anybody, really. It's, you know, it's a claim that everybody makes. So we ran through some exercises around how to arrive at a useful differentiation and broke into some, you know, some different groups and workshopped fictitious businesses to try and make that happen. And, yeah, it was really good. There's about 65 people attended, so it was a fairly decent class size and a big couple of days.
So, I mean, it's – sorry, Marcus, to cut across you.
That's all right.
So what is the – I always struggle with that, you know. Did he give advice about how to find that differentiator, how to identify what makes you different?
Yeah, so there's a few different exercises that we went through. One of them we spent a bit of time working on was taking the assumptions off your industry and then reversing those assumptions and then trying to work out a business model or some positioning around that reversed assumption.
Yeah.
So, okay, you engage a digital agency, and what are some general rules of the industry? What are some things that people expect are going to happen? Like, you send out an RFP, and then you have to get a quote, and then you have to do this meeting, and then you have to, like, you know, list your processes. What's the normal rules of engagement? And then line by line, say, well, what if the reverse were true? And what if the reverse were true? And what if the reverse were true? And not everything is, you know, feasible for the reverse to be true, but some things are, and you can sort of pick one and go, okay, well, what if we did that opposite to everybody else in the industry, and that's our differentiator?
Yeah. And I think that's really good, because the way that I've done it, which is a little bit similar to that in some ways, is anything where, you know, if you say, for example, you're trustworthy and that's what makes you different, I don't anything where if you flip it and it seems totally unreasonable, right? So you couldn't say we're untrustworthy, right? No, nobody would ever get business by saying I'm untrustworthy. So as a result,
we're so cheap, but we're a bit unreliable.
Yeah.
So
Nobody's ever going to say it. So as a result, that can't be a thing. You can't use that as a differentiator, because the opposite doesn't work. So you've got to come up with something where doing the opposite is a viable option, if that makes sense. So for
That's
example,
right.
Yeah. So for example, I say that I help savvy marketers, product owners, and UX advocates, so people that already get it and understand the value, I help them to sell it within their organization. But it would be perfectly okay to do the opposite of that, which is I work with people that are absolute newbies, don't have a clue about it, and need help, you know, doing it from scratch. That would be a valid opposite, but that's not what I do. You know, so yeah. I think that sometimes helps. And yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, because, I mean, there'll be a bunch of things on that list where if you reverse the assumption, you can't use it. Like, you know, there's lots that you can't. But all you need to do is find one in that list. And it's like, yeah, I can do something with that.
Yeah.
Another one, we didn't necessarily pick this up at this course, but one that I've been using for a few years is a lot of people like to say, oh, you know, we provide good quality service, which is, again, another meaningless kind of line. And the example I like to use is, well, if you remember, Domino's used to do that, it's 30 minutes or it's free.
Yeah.
They didn't say our pizzas, like we deliver fast. They drilled down and made a very specific promise that meant something to people. So, you know, if your differentiator is the quality of your service, well, what does that mean? Drill that down to a really specific measurable thing that you can promise and hang your shingle on, I suppose, rather than just the broad, you know, our stuff's good quality.
The other thing
and requires some bravery to sort of drill down to that. I mean, can you imagine around the boardroom at Domino's when somebody said, hey, let's do this, everybody else would have been gone, you're nuts.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That's going to lose us a fortune.
but it worked. It worked. So, it's about being brave sometimes.
I think there's also
a need to be clear. Sometimes to say, one way of defining yourself is to define yourself by who you're not, or who you're not for, for example. So yeah, I wrote a list recently. Instead of writing a list of who I want my clients to be, I wrote a list of people that shouldn't hire me, right? So I'll read the list to you because it's quite interesting. Right. So if you're any of these people, you shouldn't hire me, okay? Those that prioritize analytics over everything else, right? I tend to do a lot of qualitative research. So if all you care about is analytics, I'm not the right person for you. But again, notice how the opposite is valid. If you do care a lot about analytics, that's okay, but you shouldn't hire me. Those interested in fast results over the cost of long-term business success, right? So I tend to work for the long term. And if you need quick results, I'm not your guy because my techniques won't help with that. Those that feel that fighting for the user experience isn't a battle that can be won, right? Then that's not something I can help with. Those who aren't willing to challenge the status quo within their organization, well, I can't make stuff happen. I can't improve the user experience unless you're willing to challenge the existing way you work. Those who don't see the business value in inclusive design. So if you don't already see that there's a value in designing for accessibility or stuff, that's not something I can really help with. Those who confidently believe that they already know the direction they need to go, because I'm never confident in knowing what the direction should be. I test it. Those who look to me to have just the answers rather than us working in partnership together. That's not for me. And those who have got established working practices that they aren't willing to reconsider. So, you know, that kind of helps to be able to say these people aren't for me, you know, yeah. Or I'm not for them.
Do you have that on your website?
Point.
Is that public facing?
No, not yet.
Maybe it should be.
Yeah, I know. I'm kind of toying with whether
to put that on. Come on, be brave. Be brave.
Should I put it on my website? All right, I will. I'm taking a task now.
I mean, one of the other things that we went through as well is like some of the things that you use to differentiate you appeal to, you know, your tribe, and by that nature exclude people who are not part of your tribe. And that's a bit Seth Godin, if you've ever read any of his stuff. You know, he shares a similar philosophy to that. But in being differentiated and useful and appealing to somebody, there's somebody else for whom you're not a good fit.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It is what it is.
Absolutely. But it's kind of scary, isn't it, doing that, you know, being brave and saying, you know, these aren't people for me. You shouldn't hire me. Even me saying it now on the podcast, I'm thinking, oh, what if I put somebody off, you know?
Yeah, it does require a bit of bravery. But, I mean, I had a similar experience just this week to what you were saying earlier. Went to a meeting with a fairly big organisation in town. They do a lot of exporting. They would have been a really good client to pick up. They had two projects and neither of them are a good fit for me, and I ended up telling them that. And the same deal. They appreciated the honesty and they said, same deal, like, what is it that you do? And I told them and they went, okay. We'll keep that in mind because, you know, we might need some of that later on. But whereas if you sit there and try and take on everything, you do it, then end up doing a mediocre job of it all, and that's not good for your long term.
No,
I think the difference there is if you go and have a chat with someone about a particular project that they want, that they're interested in you potentially working with them on, and you know that that isn't a good fit, then yeah, absolutely, tell them. And you're probably going to earn points from doing that. I think it's dangerous to state, I don't work with X, I don't work with Y, because your idea of what that means could be different to somebody else's. For example, the first one about analytics. Mm. Your idea of what I don't work with someone who focuses on analytics could be completely different to theirs. You may be more analytics based than they are, but they think they're an analytics weird or whatever.
That's,
so
yeah, that's
very
a good point.
Dangerous
yeah.
thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
To make sweeping statements. But project by project, yes, I think it's don't take on things you can't deliver on, because that's just misery.
But Marcus, I like sweeping statements. I've made a career out of sweeping statements.
Yes.
Damn, anyway, being sensible. Mm.
Again, well, but that's possibly true. But again, by making that statement, there are some people whom you will naturally attract to you. It's like, yes, I agree with that. That's the way I feel.
Yeah.
And all you need is enough of those. And the people who are sitting on the fence and maybe, maybe not, well, as long as you've got enough of the people who read that and go, yes, that's me, happy days.
Yeah. It's I'm kind of somewhere between the two of you. I could see both sides of it. And so I think to some degree, it depends on how well established you are, what kind of business you're supporting, all of those kinds of things. So for example, that list that I just read there, I could get away with putting it on my site. Yes, I would probably lose some people that I would have won. But I've got a big enough reach and I get enough leads coming in that I'd probably attract more than I lost. And it would be more of the right kind of people. But in, say, Headscape's situation, that's a little bit different because they're supporting a whole agency rather than just one individual. The type of client that they tend to attract, I think, is a less educated client than the kind of client that I attract.
You just said that out loud. Look out.
Yeah. Well, no, that's not actually any disrespect to the Headscape's clients at all. I'm just saying it's a different kind of people. People that come to me are people that have read all of my stuff, that are aware of what I, you know, my methodology and my approach and all of that kind of thing. While, you know, Headscape's responding to a lot of invitations to tender and that kind of stuff where, you know, it may be a busy marketing director, or it might just be somebody in procurement or people that aren't digital experts. So that's no, I'm not saying that they are uneducated just generally, but they are within, you know, that kind of particular area.
You're maybe just saying bunch of thickies, aren't you, Paul?
I am not calling your clients thickies. Although now you mention it. Yeah. So it is very much depending on how you position yourself and things like that. So would you recommend then, so did you go on this branding course really for yourself, or were you going on it to learn stuff for your clients, or a little bit of both?
It's for myself mostly. It's I think I mentioned last time, you know, we spent over 20 years as an agency, but I want to get out of the production side of things and just work in that, you know, consulting strategic level stuff. So we're putting together some packages and workshops around that. So this was really just for myself, for my own knowledge, to help me build out my skills in that area, you know, so I can provide those services to clients.
Okay, I'm with it. Cool. Right, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and so, it was a good excuse for a holiday.
Absolutely, yeah. Makes perfect sense to me. Well, thank you so much, Jason, for telling us about that. That was really good, actually. Led to a really interesting conversation about positioning yourself and in the market. So, yeah, great. Thank you.
And I notice that we're currently all sharing the same position, and that's seated.
Yes, exactly.
Sorry, that's an awful joke, but, you know, I know what the quality of those are like on the show.
Was about the right level. Well done. All right, see you, Jason.
See you later, guys.
So yeah, really, the whole issue of like positioning yourself as somebody running an agency or running any kind of business is really important. Mm. And I one of the things that I encounter all the time is that lack of confidence to say no, this isn't a good fit, or these type of people are not a good fit. But it's hard to do, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot easier when, you know, the order book's full, for example. That's you just have to sometimes, I guess, because nothing is black and white. Sometimes you think this is a bigger risk than maybe, you know, another previous project might have worked on. But you've got to weigh it up and decide whether you're going to go for something or not. Mm. And I think there's going to be an awful lot coming up over the next 6 months of, we'll just take on anything because there isn't going to be a lot of work out there. He said, hey, isn't that happy? Happy thought of the day.
What makes you feel that? Because of this coronavirus?
Yeah, or, absolutely. I think people are just going to kind of shut down, or go on pause. Everything's going to go on pause for a few months.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure because from our perspective, the kind of work that we do doesn't require a lot of face-to-face meetings, doesn't...
Oh, no. You know, it doesn't from that point of view, but I guess it's just, I think people are going to be distracted.
That could well be true. I don't know. Yeah. I think it's going to be all right from our industry's point of view. I think there will be some exceptions. So, for example, I could imagine if you work with a lot of clients in particular sectors that are impacted, you know, then you're going to see a big thing. But I think in some areas it could actually be a boom, you know. I mean, people that are selling toilet roll at the moment must be laughing, you know. toilet roll and hand sanitizers. That, I just don't get the toilet roll thing, because how does that help? Anyway, whatever.
Eggs is the other one. That's the one that really gets me. So I keep going into the little shop over the road, and there's never any eggs on the shelf. It's like, what? It's like, they don't last forever. Why are you going to stock up on eggs? I can understand rice and pasta and things like that, you know, tins of stuff. Anyway, I still don't get that one.
But anyway, let's do our second sponsor, and then we'll see where we go from there. So our second sponsor is Aurelius, which is a user research platform. So it helps you manage and collate and understand and interpret all your user research. So there's a lot of challenges, aren't there, around user research. You know, you end up with loads of notes to wade through. Your clients and colleagues need convincing that the research is of value and to pay attention to it. You've got to interpret all the data that you collect, and you've got to, make sure that you're not repeating previous research and so on. So that's where Aurelius comes in, how it helps. It's a single platform for organizing, sharing, and interpreting your user research. So it helps you move from that kind of raw, messy data of a load of notes, which I'm about to experience, actually, because I've got a load of user interviews coming up this week, all the way through to then building a kind of research repository where you can analyze and make sense of your data really fast. So it helps you create those kind of key findings and insights. It's all searchable. It's easy to share with other people. So go check it out. It's AureliusLab.com. So that's AureliusLab.com. There you go. So that is Aurelius, and that was Jason. Is there anybody else who wants to jump on the show? Please let me know now in the chat. In the meantime, I did want to, I'm promoting random apps. There's another app I wanted to mention, and this isn't a sponsored one, but I found it recently, and I'm so relieved to find it, right? Because one of the things that, let's be honest, there's a lot of things that we've been doing in person for a while that we're now having to do remotely because of, you know, getting together. One of those things is card sorting. So getting people to do card sorting exercises could be quite useful doing card sorting, but it would be very useful if we could do it remotely. Unfortunately, the only tool that I've really found that's dedicated to doing this is Optimal Sort. Which I really dislike. But there's a new one now that I found recently that is really good, and it's called uxops.com. And it's a reimagined card sorting. I don't know, I just read that off of the website. I don't know why. It's just cards. It's card sorting, virtual card sorting. I don't know quite how it's reimagined. So you can create card sorting tests. You can discover patterns easily and that kind of thing. And it's beautifully designed and very, very easy for people to take those tests remotely. So you might want to check that one out because it does look quite good. Cool. Okay, did anybody volunteer while I was rambling on about that, Marcus?
Aslan said, I could join if you can't find anyone better. Or words to that effect.
Do you know what? Let's get Aslan on. Let's say hello to him because it's been a little while, hasn't it? If I can click the button, see what he's been up to in the meantime since we last spoke to him. Aslan, I'll put him in my notes. Hello, Aslan. How you doing, mate?
Hello. Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Yeah, not bad at all.
Not so feeling what... a bit sick or anything then?
No, I don't have time for that. Don't have time for that at all. I've stupidly volunteered to do far too much exercise lately. And yeah, I've got a race on Sunday to.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So they're not cancelling that then? Big gathering of people?
I hope they do, because then I can win it.
I was just about to say that. So yeah, only like two of you turn up. Nobble the other bloke.
Exactly.
So what's going on at Just Giving these days? What have you been up to? Been working on anything interesting?
We've been put in a really lucky position. Actually, since I joined, there was a push to do this. And something that actually attracted me to the role was that they acknowledged that there is not a lot of time for addressing tech debt.
Right.
And actually picking up all those things that we say we really want to do and just never get around to doing it. And so we put aside a full quarter to address all of that and have it being driven by engineering rather than by product and other needs. And actually, that got taken even farther. Ooh. So it's not just a quarter that we've got for it. It's five quarters.
Whoa!
So we have to acknowledge that yes, there are things that we do need to do to address product needs, and we can't let ourselves fall behind our competitors. We do still have to address all of that. So that's fine, and we are taking it as a sort of 75%, 25% way of working. And yeah, so we've got all that time to do all of these things, and we've pitched it as a stability. So we're improving our systems, everything in the back end we're updating. We've got some quite legacy things going on there that we are making more robust and bringing up to date into better ways of working. We're making progress into revamping the whole front end so that we actually have better ways of working there. So we have more shared components and more. So we had very, very distinct areas of the product before that had very different ways of being put together. And we're bringing those all into alignment at the moment. And actually, that's something that I've just had this morning release into our dev and staging environments as a sort of in the form of an A/B test, but so that we can control flipping between the two variants of it.
That sounds amazing. The big question that I imagine everybody's having is, how did you swing that? How did you make the case?
So last year, there was quite a big incident. This was before I started, and we had an outage.
Ah.
And it was one that that raised enough awareness that we needed to do something about it, that we could use that to use a term that I don't really like, leverage our point of view and say, yeah, these are things that we've been wanting to address, and we need that kick up the arse to actually get the support behind it and to get the resourcing to do so.
Can I take one step back and understand what the term tech debt means, because I've always thought it means like it's the cost of looking after old systems and versus changing them for something that's more future-proofed. Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah, we're talking about that. We're talking about things that maybe we released as an MVP and never got round to adding in the additional bits that that we intended to. We're talking, yeah, as you say, things that have become legacy over time haven't been maintained or updated to match where we expect to be at now.
It's so sad, isn't it, that it takes some kind of disaster before people recognize the need to sort this stuff. And I think the moral of the story, what we've heard here, is to manufacture an outage or disaster on your site. And then finally, people will take technical debt and tech legacy seriously. So that's a good moral.
Yeah, we do have the added bonus in that we did get acquired by an American firm, Blackboard. Who have been able to support us through this and actually put funding behind it as well to ensure that we can do all of this. And also it's a means for us to be able to put stuff in front of them and say, these are things that we want to do that's quite progressive, and that they can look at those in a... I guess we're a smaller part of the business compared to what they do. So they can use it as a little bit of a proving ground as well for things that we want to push forward.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Really interesting. Thank you, Aslan, for popping on and giving us an update. It's nice to know that actually sometimes tech debt does get taken seriously. I think you're the first case I've ever come across where it's got the investment that it really needs. But well done to you guys. Yes. All right. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, mate.
Wow. That's great that's happening, but it does make me sad. It does make me sad that it always is the lowest priority. It's interesting that it's actually in my own little way, on my own little website, I've just finally got around to deal with the tech debt of my own site, you know, which has got a database that's what, 12 years old or what, 14 years old now. And how many plugins have I installed to my WordPress installation over that period of time and then deleted, and it's left crap in the database that's slowing it down. And, you know, these things do build up and you do need to deal with them. You know, even on a little site that's just me on my own, you know, let alone something of the size of Just Giving.
There's also a security issue potentially with that kind of stuff, things that get left behind.
Yeah.
You have to.
I know. Scary business. All right. I think we'll call that a show for today. We've got Marcus's joke first. So, yeah.
Well, Marcus. In fact, it's Aslan's joke.
Oh, is it? Oh, cool.
Yes. So blame him for this.
Okay.
I just popped into Cafe Nero and the barista was wearing a face mask. I asked, "Why are you wearing a surgical mask?" And he replied, "I'm not. It's a coffee filter." Coffee. Coffee.
That is terrible.
It seemed appropriate.
It is appropriate. I will give you that. It was probably better written down, I'm guessing.
Yes, one of those.
It happens. Often the case, but. It was worth a try, Marcus. well done for trying.
It's excellent.
All right, then. So, yes, wonderful. Thank you very much for joining us on this week's show. I hope that there was something useful for it in you. It was great. Thank you for Jason and Aslan stepping up and being willing to come and join the discussion. We would, as you can tell, we would love to have new people on the show. So if you fancy finding out more about when things are happening, and when the next show is and how you can be involved, go to subscribe.boagworld.com/community and sign up and then join us. We would love to have a chat with you. You don't need to have anything prepared, as you can tell neither Jason nor Aslan had a clue what they were going to talk about before they came on today's show. But I don't know about you, but I got some really good takeaways from that, so it was worth doing. All right, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you again next week. Goodbye. Oh,